Welcome to the Arlington Street Church podcast. Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
I remember my first preaching class in divinity school where we learned about the best practices for preaching. One rule of preaching that was drilled into us many times: don't preach about something when you're deep in it. Don't preach on something when emotions are fresh. It won't go well, the professor told us with total certainty. It's been many years since I've been in this class, and I've preached a few sermons since then. Today is the first time I'm going to break this rule. Hopefully it will go okay. In 2 weeks, our Reverend Kim is retiring after 35 years at Arlington Street. So many of us are grieving. I know that I am. Last year, before I knew Kim was retiring, I told Reverend Kim I thought I would take a break from my usual sermon topics and dive into the theology of Taylor Swift. She just nodded her head. But when Reverend Kim asked me to preach this Sunday, just 2 weeks before her last service as our senior minister, I knew it wasn't the right time to preach about Taylor. Even though I'm deep in it, maybe because I'm deep in it, it feels important to preach about grief. Though I am preaching from the pulpit, I'm very much sitting beside you in this grief. Beside you in the pews, beside you at home as you look into your Zoom squares. And if you are just finding us, or if you are visiting for the day, this love letter for the grieving is offered for whatever is at the center of your grief. There's so much that can be said about grief, so many sermons, but for today, I want to talk about grief as it exists within our multitudes. In his poem, Song of Myself, Walt Whitman proclaims, "I am large, I contain multitudes." After an especially difficult leadership meeting, a colleague asked me how I was holding up. "I feel so small," I told her. The next day, she gave me a sticker of a periwinkle jar with different pinks, blues, and purples swirling inside it. The jar was labeled Multitudes. I wonder what grief feels like to you. One experience of grief is that grief can overtake our internal world. It can be so big that it can take up all the space in our heart and in our mind. We can feel like our grief is all there is. We can feel that we are all sadness, all fear, all loneliness. We can feel as if grief wipes everything else out. But what if our multitudes exist even when the grief is huge? I believe that they do. When we believe that we contain multitudes, even when we can't always feel everything, can't always trust everything, we exist in a world of yes and. Our grief is there. It is real, and it is not everything that we are. We are large. We contain multitudes. It can be hard to remember the multitudes. Many of us get caught up in all or nothing thinking, our minds in trying to take care of ourselves. Our minds want certainty, they want sense, they want predictability. But multiple things can be true at once. We can hold conflicting feelings, experiences, and thoughts. Our minds are vast, We are so beautifully complicated. The multitudes that we contain are endless. So many emotions, experiences, states of being. What makes up being human for you? I'd like to take you on a tour of some of the multitudes that I've seen and experienced existing beside grief. Beauty can exist beside grief. I work as a hospital chaplain, and I often share stories. When I do, I change identifying details to protect my colleagues and patients, but keep the essence of what happened. A young physician that I'll call Liam died suddenly, leaving behind a spouse, young children, and a shocked work community. My colleagues were feeling deep sadness at losing Liam, and they were also feeling their own sense of stability shaken. I organized a memorial service for him at our hospital. In preparing for this, I talked with some of his closest people, many of whom shared stories about Liam's love of Broadway. There were many stories about how Liam would try to see shows when he was on call. Our hospital is very close, very, very close to the theater district. And he would almost always get called back, but Liam was happy if he could see even 10 minutes of a show. His favorite, his friends told me, was Hamilton. I worked with our music therapist to include this music in the service. We ended the service with the song, It's Quiet Uptown. There are moments that the words don't reach. There's a grace too powerful to name. We push away what we can never understand. We push away the unimaginable. They are standing in the garden, Alexander by Eliza's side. She takes his hand. It's quiet uptown. Our hospital executive came up to me afterwards. She took my hand, crying, and said, I was so moved by that last song. Her voice was beautiful. The words were beautiful. It means something to experience the beauty that Liam had loved. I am so sad, and this was so beautiful. Tenderness can exist beside grief. I was talking with two colleagues after an especially difficult day. A long-term patient had died, and the grief across the unit was palpable. My colleague Annie looked especially weary. Annie, our colleague Mary said, it has been a hard day. Can you rest tomorrow? Annie's face crumpled, and she explained that she needed to drive 3 hours to a memorial service. Annie was not partnered, and her family did not live in state. I have to go, she said. She was my teacher. Her family asked me to read a poem. I have to go, but I really, really, really don't want to. Mary is known across the unit as everybody's mom. Her ability to know how to care for others feels mystical. Annie, Mary said, I am off tomorrow. I would love to drive you. I can't relieve you of today's loss. I can't keep you from tomorrow's pain, but I can drive you there. You can rest on the way while I drive. I can give you a little company. I would love to take care of you in this small way if I can. I was awestruck by Mary's tenderness, and I could see the relief on Annie's face almost instantly. I recently felt like Annie, running around with too many commitments and feeling depleted of spirit and of energy. I was running late to one of these commitments and raced to the parking garage at my apartment building. Just as the door was closing, a mom and her daughter, who looked about 5, pushed the door open. Sorry, the mom said. You've got to be kidding, my mind said. The mom pressed her floor, then her daughter hit another 2 buttons, then the mom realized she hit the wrong floor and hit yet another. I didn't feel patient. As I stressed about all that I needed to do, This little girl, without any warning, leaned against me so she could fix her shoe. She looked up at me and smiled, and then she and her mom were off to go find their car. This moment of tenderness struck me, and it stayed with me. Connection can exist beside grief. During the pandemic, I got to know a patient that I'm going to call Joanna. Joanna had a terminal and progressive condition and had to be hospitalized often. Joanna hated feeling like a patient, and no matter how sick she got, she worked hard to form connection. I got to know Joanna, and Joanna loved talking about dating. She told me about how she had met her beloved second husband and about the good and bad dating experiences her daughter had had. At one hospitalization, Joanna proclaimed, "Allie, my daughter met the nicest boy online. We need to get you a dating profile. The nurses think so too." The nurses, I thought, Judas, every single one of them. "We've got to find you a nice boy," Joanna said for the third time. Finally, I took a deep breath. I want to be authentic with my patients, and I don't want to put walls up between us. It's a hard balance. "Joanna," I said, "who knows what the future will bring, but for now, it would have to be a nice girl." The room stopped. I panicked. "Oh," Joanna said, "you're a lesbian then? I have a friend who's a lesbian. Did you know they could marry now?" "Yes," I said, smiling. "Okay, there's got to be a lesbian dating site. Now, do you want to be the girl lesbian or the boy lesbian?" The nurses panicked. "You know, Joanna," I said, "I would really just like a nice lesbian, but I'm not ready for a dating profile." We had some version of this conversation many times. Recently, Joanna came into the hospital incredibly sick. Her team was worried. She could barely open her eyes. I went to go see her. "I'm here, Joanna," I said. She opened one eye. "Allie? Yes, it's me. Did you get that dating profile?" "Joanna," I said, there's a whole room full of doctors and nurses, by the way. "Joanna, that isn't what is important now." Joanna looked at me, stared, and said, "It is exactly what is important. What makes you think you will have endless time?" Stopped me in my tracks. As I visited with Joanna's husband and daughter, they both let me know that Joanna had instructed them to tell me to get a dating profile. She was relentless and wanting to connect beyond her medical circumstances. So I gave in, sort of. I made a draft of a dating profile, my first ever. I spent hours answering the questions with honesty and depth, and I was surprised how meaningful the experience was. I wore my best and still chaplain-appropriate Carrie Bradshaw outfit to see Joanna. It involved a pink tutu. "What's the occasion?" she asked. "A gift for you," I said. I handed her a printout of my draft dating profile and a red pen. "You can give me feedback if you want." Joanna was thrilled. Thrilled. We spent the last couple of days of her life working on this dating profile. She knew she was dying. "Will you activate it?" she asked. I wanted to be honest. "I don't know," I said. "But if I ever meet someone I think I could marry, I am going to tell her all about you." After Joanna died, her husband called to tell me how much Joanna loved working with me on the dating profile and wanted me to know that my draft is now in a box of her treasures. Connection can happen in the midst of grief. I remember being in the throes of the pandemic at the hospital. I remember not being able to physically see my friends, not being able to be embraced or to embrace others. On a phone call with a mentor, she listened to me describe a day of losing 8 patients, all dying away from their families, with our team giving them as much love as we could. This was one of the heaviest times of my life, and I can still hear my teacher's gentle words as if she was saying them right now. I pray for you every single day. Allie, every day. Knowing and believing that I was thought of in this intimate, loving way comforted me as I grieved. It still comforts me. As a community, this is a time of grieving for us. Can you believe that you contain multitudes? Can we together believe that we contain multitudes? What is a part of who you are, even when you can't easily access it? Beauty, tenderness, connection, something else. If you can't name the multitudes, maybe it is enough just to have faith that they are there, even if they are hidden from your sight and from what you can feel. Can we help remind each other of our multitudes in the weeks and months and years to come? Can we show each other tenderness? Can we create beauty for each other? Can we come together to connect? The beautiful thing about the yes and, the beautiful thing about multitudes, is that there is always, always space for the grief. You are large. Your mind is large. Your heart is large. You contain multitudes. If you are grieving, Reverend Kim, if you are grieving someone or something else, if you are grieving many things at once, I wish you music. I wish you a car ride. I wish you a smile. I wish you a dating profile project. I wish you a prayer. I wish you beauty beside your grief, tenderness beside your grief, connection beside your grief. Our grief is important, very important, and our grief is not all that we are. You are beautiful in your multitudes, and we are beautiful in our multitudes. Amen. And now for our benediction, I invite you to put your hands over your heart in namaste. I bow to the divine in you. This is called for multitudes. You are large, you contain multitudes, Walt whispered to me. Please help me remember, I whispered back. I look at you, I whisper to you, let me help you remember. I look at you sitting on your bed, crying after losing your job. You can't feel your purpose. I go to your bedside table and take a stack of your books to bring you. You've always found inspiration here. It's okay for your tears to fall on the text. I look at you kneeling at her grave years after her death. You feel her missing everywhere you go. I hand you blue hydrangeas, just like the ones you planted around the beach house. You are mesmerized by their beauty. You remember she can't see them. It's okay to leave something beautiful in this painful place. I look at you as you slam the door, anger exploding. You don't think you will ever trust again. I don't know you. I smile at you. You feel less alone. Then you remember the betrayal. It's okay for the it's okay to look for the smile from behind the wall. You are large, Walt whispers in the wind. There's enough room for it all, I speak to the vast sky. We contain multitudes. Let us keep this faith, beloveds, and pass it on. The service begins when the service ends. Bless your hearts. I love you. Amen.
Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. Go. Where you go, I will go, beloved. Where you go, I will go. For your people are my people. Your people are mine. Your people are my people. Your divine, my divine.
Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.